afternoon. You are tuned to Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, the 29th of March, the year 2016. I'm Jeff Barron, your host for today. Today we'll be talking with Ann K. McNaughton about her upcoming art classes. Rebecca Sozo will be here with details about the AmeriCorps program. Sean Isley from Discovery Southeast will be here with an update on upcoming activities. And we'll learn about the Juno Community Charter School. That Writer's Almanac, Learn Note Music and More today on a Juno Afternoon. Well, the forecast for tonight, patchy fog with rain in the evening, low temperatures around 39 degrees. Forecast for Wednesday, partly cloudy in the morning, then becoming sunny. It's patchy fog in the morning, high temperatures around 54 degrees. That's on Wednesday. Thursday, sunny weather continuing.
This is National Native News. I'm Stephen Emmons, in for Antonia Gonzalez. Arizona State Public Safety officials are investigating a police shooting in Winslow over the weekend that left a 27-year-old woman dead. Police say the incident started with a shoplifting complaint from a convenience store. Police tell ABC 15 TV they stopped L'Oreal Singini, who was on foot. They say she threatened police officers with a weapon, so they opened fire. Police don't say what kind of weapon the woman had. The White Mountain Independent newspaper identifies Singini as a member of the Navajo Nation. A new survey in Montana indicates the majority of the state's residents have a negative view of tribal sovereignty. Montana Public Radio's Eric Whitney reports.
The survey was done by the University of Montana and Stanford University for their annual Rural West Conference. University of Montana political science professor Christopher Musty says he was surprised that 60% of Montanans have a negative view of tribal sovereignty in general.
Especially in light of the fact that when we ask people questions about tribal control over both resources on the reservations and off tribal reservations, there was a large majority supporting tribal sovereignty in those ways.
The survey comes shortly after a legislative session where one of the most hotly contested issues was a water rights agreement with Montana's Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes. The agreement was approved over significant non-Indian opposition. The survey was done over phones and cell phones and was a representative sample of the state's population, including the roughly 6% of Montanans who were Native. For National Native News, I'm Eric Whitney.
A series of community dialogues to combat racism in towns surrounding the Wind River Indian Reservation in Wyoming is gaining steam. Wyoming Public Radio's Melody Edwards reports that organizers say the meetings are going so well, they plan to continue indefinitely.
The U.S. Justice Department suggested hosting the dialogues after a shooting at a detox center last summer by a white city employee that left one Northern Arapaho man dead and another severely injured. Northern Arapaho Social Services Director Allison Sage says more people are attending the meetings, including city and tribal leaders. He says the goal is to teach the community how to talk about racism.
And we're learning about our civil rights. We don't know about our civil rights, but we need to keep learning and educate both sides about civil rights, what they mean.
Sage says at the meetings, small groups get together and brainstorm solutions. For instance, setting up call centers where people can report discrimination, or just making reservation border towns more welcoming to Native Americans.
The city officials said, well, we wanted to put up a welcome sign welcoming the tribes to the city in the Arapaho language and in the Shoshone language.
Wyoming Association of Churches Director Chessie Lee heard other solutions, too.
Native American education for all in Wyoming's public schools so that every school in Wyoming has a strong curriculum about Native American issues.
Lee says they hope to turn these ideas into action by encouraging people to sign so-called commitment sheets, agreements to take on specific duties to make change happen. They've already scheduled another dialogue to be held next month. For National Native News, I'm Melody Edwards in Laramie.
Later next month, Elizabeth Woody will assume her role as the State of Oregon's Poet Laureate. Woody is a member of the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. She's published poetry, short fiction, and essays. Woody has also won the American Book Award and the William Stafford Memorial Award for Poetry. She's also a visual artist. She was a founding member of the Board of Native Arts and Cultures Foundation. Governor Kate Brown named her to the position. As Poet Laureate, she will give up to 20 public readings. Woody tells Oregon Public Broadcasting she plans to give readings in 9 of Oregon's Native communities and the border towns nearby. For National Native News, I'm Stephen Emmons.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support by VisionMaker Media, whose mission is to empower and engage Native people to tell stories. On February 20th, VisionMaker Media celebrates 40 years of advancing Native culture, heritage, wisdom, sacred stories, and the storyteller. More at visionmakermedia.org.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. You too can become a modern-day warrior. Stand firm with NARF. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes past the hour, and you're tuned into Juno Afternoon here for Tuesday. And our first guest in the studio is M.K. McNaughton. M.K., thank you for coming by.
Thank you for having me.
So you got a lot of things coming up. You got your art classes. You got First Friday coming up.
Yep, First Friday. No joking, April 1st.
It's a national holiday for me. So let's talk about your art classes first. Yeah, two of them available right now, Kids Mixed Media and Adult Oil Painting.
I do have two classes in April, and the Kids Mixed Media is actually full right now. If people are interested, though, they could email me, and I could. I'm trying to figure out whether I should offer a class in May or not. And then the adult oil painting is April 6th through 27th, Wednesday nights, from 6 to 8:30 p.m. And there's one spot left in that class.
You're doing pretty good.
They're pretty small classes too, which is nice. It's my studio's small, and I get to really interact with folks. So.
What do you tell the kids who are working with mixed media? Is there any kind of a rule?
I don't really have rules apart from using materials responsibly. And I like giving kids actual tools like drills and saws and hot glue guns and expecting them to use them well. And nice art materials, not tempera paint, but nice paint. And I have all kinds of junk in my studio that's fun to incorporate into pieces. And I try to do a mix of things like simple old-fashioned charcoal drawing, which kids usually really love and appreciate, and also mixing it up with doing something, you know, wild, like taking apart an old piano and drilling holes in the pieces. And
I'm just going to ask you, what kind of mixed media pieces do you use? What parts are people's favorites?
You know, every class is different, and I like to have three projects planned for every class, you know, and then see what they respond to, that particular group, and then plan the next class accordingly. So I try to always incorporate one drawing, one painting, and one multimedia. And I go from the cleanest to the messiest, because it's really hard to go the other way.
Can you talk a little bit about the properties of acrylics and oils and watercolors? Are they similar in some ways?
Yeah, fun question. I paint mostly in oils, and I don't really know why, except that I think I was drawn to the way they look. They're oily, they're shiny, and for that reason, they dry more slowly than water-based acrylic or watercolor. And so after painting in oils for a long time, when I first pick up watercolor or acrylic, it can feel frustrating to me because they dry so fast, and I'm used to being able to work the paint on the surface. I also have to wait patiently. When I get a lot of paint on a canvas, it starts turning into muck. If you put too much on, you need to let it dry in between layers. So for some people, that's a drawback to oil painting, but for me, it isn't. I just work on a bunch of paintings at one time. And then I can rotate. And that forces me to look at things and not overwork them, too.
For your classes, there's an emphasis on experimentation.
There is. I want people to make their own art. I don't claim to be an expert artist, but I am very disciplined, and I'm working hard to learn a lot myself. So I feel like that's what I can offer as a teacher. I can show them what I'm trying to learn, too, and offer skills and techniques and exercises that help you grow as an artist. And then within that, though, I want people to paint in their own style. So I don't like it when a teacher only likes their own work and tries to make everybody kind of look like them. So I'm happy that I have this really diverse collection of art happening in my studio. It's actually really fun to watch for me.
Are there any rules of composition, or is the rule to break the rules?
There are certain things that do seem to kind of hold true. If you put something exactly in the center of the canvas, it really draws your eye there. But if that's what you want, then it's very effective. So maybe I don't believe in rules. Because that's not really breaking a rule if you're doing it on purpose. You're just choosing to do that.
But 4 years ago, you left the security of your day job at Canvas and started up Sketch Studio. Have you regretted it at all?
I have not regretted it one bit. I have at times wondered if I was a little bit crazy to do it, because as somebody in my early 50s and without much retirement after working for nonprofits, I recognize that there's some flaws in that plan. But on the other hand, I'm really happy with what I'm doing, and I'm just making a little living teaching classes and making art, and I'm doing what I want to do. So I'm kind of incorporating my retirement into my life, and that feels great. I love it. I love my studio.
You like oils best?
I like oils, and I also love drawing in charcoal. But when I first moved into the studio, I gave myself an assignment to draw a salt shaker 100 different ways, the same little tiny glass salt shaker. And that exercise forced me to, you know, out of desperation, to find different ways to draw it, to use a lot of different materials. And I discovered I loved painting with ink. It's kind of like drawing with ink almost. And I loved layering, and I love when I draw with charcoal or other materials, erasing out as much as I like putting down the marks. So that exercise, and I try to give myself exercises like this to grow as an artist, helped me realize there were other mediums I like, because we tend to do what we're familiar with. So I try to step out of that. And I seem to be drawn towards making three-dimensional sculptural pieces, and never know what I'm going to use or what they're going to be. But when I'm creating a body of work and there's a theme, I try to make some 3D piece installation for the show as well.
So it's first day of class, and you've got some kids or some adults there.
Mm-hmm.
What's the first thing you say, and how do you gauge what direction to go?
Well, I try to, I think of myself as an art waitress, so I want the room to be all set and really comfortable. So when you walk in, usually people are tired after a long day of work and school, and I want them to feel happy as they come in and just relax. And adults have a lot of anxiety about art, so I want them to shed that anxiety. And I learned when I was teaching in the elementary school some years ago that all the little kids loved art, and up until about fourth and fifth grade, and then kids started really, they want to draw representationally, and if they don't, they self-select out. And the girls tend to say negative things about themselves, like, I'm no good, or this is terrible. And I realized what they wanted was for me to come over and say, no, that's really beautiful. And the boys just kind of disappear. So I created an art law in the elementary school, and I use it in my studio with adults. And they are the worst offenders, actually, the adults. But I set it up really quickly. As soon as I hear somebody starting to put themselves down, I tell them that if you break the art law, you can't say anything negative about yourself or anybody else. And if you do, you have to say two things you appreciate about your art. And in that, you learn how to talk about art. You don't say, I like it, or it's beautiful. You talk about the color or the composition or the brushwork, and we start to learn how to talk about art at the same time. So that I welcome people, and then I quickly lay down the law and let them know. And the class is more fun then, because then we're not putting ourselves down or feeling anxious about art, but it's problem solving. And if there's someone really, really who's struggling and is hard on themselves, I will show them examples of some of my work. There's a portrait I did that really went through some difficult phases, but I did not give up, and I kept going, and I took pictures through the process so I can show them. And you know, if it's good to share what you're struggling with as well as what you're proud of.
You got your store having its first Friday this Friday.
Yes, I'm glad you called it a store. I'm trying to kind of be a gallery where people will come and have things that you can buy year-round, little gifts. I've been painting T-shirts, so they're hand-painted with fabric paint and heat set. And I counted 64 T-shirts right now in the studio, ranging in size from newborn to adult men's 2XL. So big range, lots of different birds, and really nice quality shirts and paints. And I also have, I'm making little tiny ornaments, which I won't have this first Friday, but I'll have next first Friday. I'm excited about that. That will be, I'm hoping, a keepsake item for people to pick up, tourists, take home. They are some of my paintings made into little two-sided ornaments. And I think a local artist is printing them for me, and I think they're quite beautiful. And I also have cards and prints, and all of my paintings will be on sale because I just need to clear out the walls and build up the bank account.
And your studio is located behind Kenny's.
It is. I've actually had three new addresses this week. The city and the post office are going through a little struggle over where I am, but I'm on the corner of Front and Main, and my current and I believe permanent address is 122 Main. I'm very proud. I put the numbers up. 122 Front. I've been 126 Main for years, but I'm 122 Front Street. So behind Kenny's, and it's in the back of the parking lot by the propane tanks. And the numbers are over the door now.
I'm hearing that. Thank you for coming by the station. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
No, but I hope people will. Oh, maybe art catering. If you want to learn more about that, come to First Friday and I'll tell you all about it.
Thanks a lot for coming down.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 29th of March, 2016. It was on this day in 1944 that Anne Frank decided to rewrite her diary as an autobiography. She'd gotten this little red and white checkered diary as a present for her 13th birthday back in 1942. And a few weeks later, her sister Margaret got a notice to report for a forced labor camp by the Nazis, and the next day the family went into hiding. In March of 1944, Anne Frank and her family listened to a radio broadcast by the Dutch education minister in exile, urging ordinary Dutch citizens living under Nazi occupation to preserve documents for future generations. He said, "If our descendants are to understand fully what we as a nation have had to endure, then what we really need are ordinary documents, letters, a diary." And so Anne Frank went back through 2 years of diary entries, and she rewrote them. She gave members of her family pseudonyms. She edited for clarity and character development and background, and she decided that after the war she would write a memoir called Het Achterhuis, which means the house behind. She wrote, "I know that I can write. A couple of my stories are good. My descriptions of the secret annex are humorous. There's a lot in my diary that speaks. But whether I have real talent remains to be seen." In the spring and summer of 1944, she filled more than 300 pages of paper with her revised work. She was still working on it when the Nazis came in August of 1944 and took them away to concentration camps. 1865, on this day, marked the beginning of the Appomattox campaign, the final campaign of the Civil War. It's the birthday of the politician and author Eugene McCarthy, born Watkins, Minnesota, 1916. The novelist and screenwriter Judith Guest, Detroit, 1936, author of the novel Ordinary People. It's the birthday of the poet Ronald Stuart Thomas, born 1913 in Cardiff, Wales, advocate of Welsh nationalism and a harsh critic of the English. His autobiography, written in Welsh, entitled Neb, meaning nobody. Here's a poem for today by Faith Sheeran, Early Hominids Slept in Trees. This was before they slipped into caves and painted the drama of the hunt, before their stone tools and splendid fires, when early hominids filled the trees like night. They climbed a ladder of branches into evening, where they arranged themselves beneath the applause of leaves. There were windstorms and lightning, and somehow babies were held, and people snored or turned over. Surely someone was afraid of heights, and someone must have secured a place at the bottom or slept on the ground, demonstrating how it might be done. Balanced up there in the mythic beginning, they were safer from predators that walked on four legs, swishing tails. They clung to the trunk, felt the world growing colder, the new power in their thumbs. Trees were like houses, and going home meant climbing into the sky, where words appeared inside them like stars. Early Hominids Slept in Trees, a poem by Faith Sheeran from Orpheus Turning, published by the Broadkill River Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years, and by Staples, offering printer ink and toner cartridges for home and business, with in-store print shops offering customized presentations, booklets, and manuals. In-store and online, Staples make more happen. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's about 22 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to Juno Afternoon. Our next guests in the studio are Courtney Weiss and Rebecca Sosa, here to talk about Star AmeriCorps. Thank you for coming down the station.
Thanks for having us.
First question, what is Star AmeriCorps?
So Star AmeriCorps is the Juno Economic Development Council's AmeriCorps program. It stands for Service to Achieve Results. And the idea is to bring folks that want to provide national service in a different way, not necessarily military, and have them work here, serve here in Juno at different sites in the community to just make Juno a better place.
About how many are associated with your program?
This year, we're hosting 6 members. And we can have a lot more than that. Our agreement next year is to host up to 14, and we could even grow that number if we got enough interested host sites.
What kind of things do people do?
There's focus areas for the national program, and we're open to all of those. We're something called a multi-focus intermediary that's really just saying we're a small, isolated community. We need a lot of services. We don't have a ton of human capital here, so this is a way that we can expand that. Ours are in the schools. They work with the Choice Program and the LEAP Program for the Juno School District. We have one at JEDC that works with our STEM program. They're with AWARE, the United Way, and REACH.
Courtney, you're a AmeriCorps volunteer.
I am.
What are you doing?
I'm working with the Juno Economic Development Council's STEM Education Program. I worked with the First Lego League in December, and now we're doing First Lego League Junior. I also do after-school programs with robotics programming and with LEAP.
How did you make the choice to associate yourself with the AmeriCorps program?
So after college, during college, I was like, I don't know what I'm doing after college. And I really enjoyed service work. And so I found out about AmeriCorps and thought that that was a perfect fit. And I applied to be in Juno last year, and I got it. And so this is my second term.
How many terms can you
do? You can do up to 4 full terms, but you only get the education award that goes towards continuing your education or your student loans for the first 2 years.
And you're looking for businesses or organizations to take part in the AmeriCorps program.
Right. Yeah, we're looking for both host sites and people that have service project ideas, so that thing in the community that you know needs support. It doesn't have to be a full host site, but JEDC can also facilitate ways for organizations or, again, individuals that do see a need for that service project to combine forces and create a position to bring somebody into Juneau or to create a position for somebody who's here in Juneau. Out of our six members, two are local. One who was born and raised in Juneau, the other in from Gustavus, that both, again, wanted to serve the community and saw this as a good way. They get their education award and a pretty amazing experience out of it.
About how much money is involved?
Well, for the host site, we require a match of just over $16,000, and that's for a full year of hosting an AmeriCorps. The members themselves come in and they get a small stipend along with their education award that can go off for student loans or new education experiences. They can also, for folks over 55, go to education for people in their family. The members also get a chance to just network in the community and make great connections. Moving on, I was going to tell the story about Courtney. She's been here for 2 years and felt, she said, kind of lost looking for what to do after college and made some really cool connections with our work at NOAA, first in the Send to Sea Camp last summer and then doing some just professional development volunteering out there this year, and it led to a position for next year, which is a really great way to enter the workforce, I think.
There's pretty much jobs, but it's not free jobs.
Right. Not free jobs, and they're not jobs. We're pretty careful to say that this is service work. The AmeriCorps members are protected very much in what kinds of service they can do. They can't displace an employee, so it's not something where we're taking jobs away from people that would be getting full-time paying jobs. It's that kind of extra work that can't be provided through paid positions in the community, and you need something special to make it happen.
Cool. How do people find out more about it?
The easiest way is to just contact me. We're really anxious to create some more of these host sites and service positions, and each one can be custom tailored to what the organization or what the individual is interested in. My email is rsoza@jedc.org. You can also just give me a call, 523-2334, to talk about options. There's a little bit of information up on our website, jedc.org, and lots of information on the National AmeriCorps program. If you just Google AmeriCorps, it all pops up.
Cool. Is there anything like that I might forget to ask?
If you're interested in serving as an AmeriCorps member, that's also, if you search on the AmeriCorps website or look on our website, jedc.org, the positions that are here in Juneau are listed. And we're going to be recruiting members in May and June of this year. There's also positions in Sitka and hopefully some other places around the state. A great way to just help out Juneau and Alaska.
Cool. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
Now the code. Life in Southeast Alaska is filled with salmon. It feeds our families and sustains our communities. Our lives are salmon lives, and we are proud of that. The Salmon Project celebrates these connections between Alaskans and salmon. Visit salmonlife.org and join 10,000 Alaskans who know salmon is vital to the way we live in our great state. This message is brought to you by the Salmon Project.
31 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned into it Juneau Afternoon. Our next guest is Sean Isley from Discovery Southeast. Sean, thank you for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
So for people who don't know, educate us.
Discovery Southeast's mission is to deepen our connection with nature through education and exploration. We are a 27-year-old nonprofit based in Juneau. We're started actually by a bunch of guides who saw themselves giving great opportunities to visitors coming to this community and said they wanted to make sure that local kids got to see those same places and have those same experiences, the same formative experiences outdoors. So today we provide hands-on nature education. Our core program is tied to the science curriculum, and we go into each third, fourth, and fifth grade classroom each season of the school year and do classroom lessons and then field trips outdoors, weaving those science lessons into the natural world and the sense of place in Juneau.
What are kids' favorite places to go on these tours?
Oh, well, actually, it depends on the school, because one thing that we really care about is being very place-based, and for each school, we go to a different place. I think that's something really unique about Juneau, is that we have an amazing backyard almost in every school. And so it's really easy, there are lots of opportunities to take children outdoors and make that connection. And I think it's also important to do that in the place that's really natural for them. So it's in their community. It's somewhere they can go outside of school areas once they've had that introduction. And it's also someplace that teachers can go with their own class. So the short answer to your question is that every school has an awesome backyard. And for each school, that's our favorite place.
About how many kids do you serve a year?
Good question. You know, I would say probably about 1,400. So We're in most every third, fourth, and fifth grade classroom in Juneau. And besides doing that core nature studies program, we have an outdoor explorers summer camp, which is outdoors every day. We have an after school program. We provide some programs in the Title I elementary schools after school. And we also have a program in both middle schools that's it's kind of a health and wellness recreation program. We actually weave in a suicide prevention component and then lots of recreation programs in that after school, middle school program. So we're reaching a lot of children that way. We provide the C-Week programs for the school district, third and fourth grades. And so we see a lot of those kids again through that. So it's a lot of kids, a lot of programs.
You got a lot of things coming up, too.
We have one exciting thing coming up. April 30th is our 2016 banquet and auction. It is an awesome evening that is actually a fun banquet to go to, and it's our big fundraiser of the year, so that's really what we need to support our programs. Something pretty special about Discovery Southeast and our mission is you can tell from these answers, it's very place-based, it's very local. And so we really rely on a local base of support, and this banquet and auction is our big fundraiser for the year and a great time. So it's coming up April 30th at the Jack, and there are plenty of ticket options. The way to find your ticket is at discoverysoutheast.org.
What other things do you do besides going out to the schools?
So we do have the two after-school programs. We have the summer program. We have Discovery Days, which are kind of like, they're like mini summer camps, but they take place during the school year, during in-service days. And in kind of a creative way to affect the lives of students, we actually have a program for teachers called Teacher Expeditions. And every summer we take teachers outdoors for usually week-long wilderness trips. And the idea is to kind of foster teachers' connections with nature and also give them some of the natural science background so that they can take that information that they know and that comfort outdoors and then bring that to their classrooms and make sure that they're really engaging their students in nature every day of the school year, not just on the days that Discovery Southeast is there.
And you select a teacher or two to honor each year?
Teachers can apply. We prioritize local teachers and Alaska teachers, and it's basically just first come, first serve for that program. There is a cost to the program, and it's a ridiculously affordable cost. I think this year we're at $750 for a week teacher expedition. We've got some great local support. Alaska Glacier Seafoods is helping sponsor that trip, which is really wonderful. And This year it's actually going to go to the Indian Islands Institute, which is brand new out in Cross Sound, basing out of the Hobbit Hole. And it's this amazing, gorgeous location. You're just south of Glacier Bay. You're in Cross Sound. If you think about all of the waters of northern southeast Alaska, they're all kind of flushing through Cross Sound. And so it's this just really active marine ecosystem. You've got the glaciers from Glacier Bay. There's so much going on, and it's a remote and gorgeous place. So I think it's going to be a really good place for teachers to connect with nature, get a lot of natural science information about all those subjects, but also have a very personal relationship that they're able to bring back to their classrooms. And I should say one more thing about teachers and the importance of their programs in classrooms is that we have a lot of local teachers who are doing awesome work with their classrooms. And so at our banquet, we have the Discovery Award, which is an award to recognize a local teacher who goes the extra mile to engage their classrooms in nature. And so we have a couple days left for nominations for that. If anyone wants to nominate their teacher or the coworker or an educator that they know that they feel is really doing that, it's a very easy nomination process. They just send a simple one-paragraph email to board@discoverysoutheast.org.
And that's B-O-A-R-D.
Yep, board of directors. So board@discoverysoutheast.org. Do that by the 31st, so in a couple more days. It's an easy process. And there you go.
And how many people get tickets for your banquet on the 30th?
DiscoverySoutheast.org.
So nicely. Anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
It is awesome to see all of the programs going on in our community right now. We're working with a lot of great partners, and we've got some great stuff going on. So check it all out at DiscoverySoutheast.org.
This is Bird Note. When it comes to nests, common sense would suggest that if you're a big bird, you build a big one. A small bird, a small one. But in fact, some species of smaller birds build large nests. None, though, build anything like the huge communal structures of sociable weavers in southern Africa's arid plains. These house sparrow-sized birds often live in accommodations with room for up to 500 birds. Made from stiff grass, they're relatively cool during the intensely hot day and relatively warm during the very cold night. A colony is made up of hundreds of individual nests clumped together. Attached to acacia trees or utility poles, they look like haystacks suspended above the earth. Each pair or family of sociable weavers has its own access hole and tunnel into a chamber within the larger complex. Some structures have persisted for more than 100 years, with constant occupation by succeeding generations of sociable weavers. One drawback of these nest structures, though, is the weight, up to a ton when dry, even more when wet. They're so heavy, they can break their supporting branches and go crashing to the earth below. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Support comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, offering fresh roasted coffees since 1974 and proud supporters of public radio since 1987. Heritage Coffee, committed to community. Information online on Facebook or heritagecoffee.com.
It's about 40 minutes past the hour, and you're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. Our next guests, Cynthia McFeeder and Star Henry, are here to talk about the Juno Community Charter School. Thank you so much for coming down the station.
Hi, Jeff. Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Jeff.
My name is Cynthia, and I'm here to talk a little bit about the fact that Juno Community Charter School is an optional school within the Juno School District. That means that anybody in the whole school district could apply to come to our school and a couple of other optional schools that are out there. And we have this month of April left for parents to be able to fill out an application and send it in to the Juno School District, and the application is due April 29th this year. And also just to kind of let folks know a little bit more about our school program.
What makes the Juno Community Charter School different from another school?
Well, we are generally a smaller school, so we have five classrooms. All of our classrooms are multi-grade classrooms. We have a K-1, a 2-3, a 4-5, and two middle school classrooms for the 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. Our school focuses on collaboration and creating relationships and really forming that school community with our parents, with our teachers, and with our students over time. And we have smaller class sizes. We have rich and varied music and art programs available throughout the school in all of our classrooms. We take frequent trips out into the community, and we just have a pretty special program, I think, because it's kind of small and family-like, friendly atmosphere.
Stella, you want to talk a little bit about your class size and the people who are in your class?
Sure. So I teach kindergarten and first grade, and my students range in ages from 5 to 7 years old, and they're with me for 2 years. So it's one thing I really like about multi-age classrooms is you get to know the students and the family really well. I have a small class, so we get to work really closely with the students, and we also have parents coming into the classroom a lot to do things like small groups. And so it's a nice way to bring parents in and also reach the students where they're at because we're in really small groups. Should I talk a little bit about our classroom?
Or? Please.
Okay, so kind of a typical day in the K-1 classroom, I would say, we start each day with what we call centers, and it's a time where students are working on various things, some usually based on just student choice. So like this morning, for instance, there were some students that were building ships with blocks, and others were painting on the easel or playing in the sand table. I had some students helping plant starter seeds for a little garden that we're growing. We're also doing a camera project right now, so we're kind of in the middle of that, and some students were setting up a pretend photo studio while others were taking apart the cameras to kind of learn about their different components. And during that time, I have parents in there as helpers, so one of the parents was helping with the camera project, helping the students label the parts and things like that, and the other parent was actually helping the students hold our pet guinea pig, Pablo, helping them take turns. So we have these ongoing projects every day. Sometimes it's like the camera project where it's more dictated by me, but the students are certainly interested in it, most of them. But other times it's dictated just by student choice. And that's a really important time in our classroom. It's a really valuable time, especially for this age group, because they need that experience making choices. And it's also it keeps them, they're so interested in what they're doing and happy to be there. It's the favorite part of everybody's day. But we also, it's a really great time to work on things like social and emotional growth in a really authentic way, because inevitably when you're collaborating and working together on things, there's going to be problems that arise. And so it's a great way for us to facilitate problem solving between students and work with them on those kinds of things as well.
What gets you excited when you come to work in the morning?
I love it. Yeah, I do. It's great fun for sure.
I'd like to talk a little bit more about the middle school program, because sometimes for some kids, especially that transition year between fifth going into the middle school, can be kind of a daunting kind of idea of moving from the smaller elementary setting to a larger middle school. And for some kids and some families, you know, they would actually like to have the choice of being in a smaller atmosphere. We have a little over 30 middle school students, grades 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. And we're able to, because we hire some extra folks to come into our school to help us teach math, we're actually able to really get those class sizes down to about, 10 kids in a class. And that can be very helpful for some students. And we do offer some after-school activities for middle schoolers. We don't have the same numbers of opportunities that maybe the larger schools might have, but we do have some unique things. We have Lego League, we have running and cross-country skiing, and our eighth graders always go on an eighth grade field trip for a week to visit Central Alaska. So that's kind of a unique thing that our eighth graders get to do every year. Our middle school also has a weekly art class and a weekly PE class. And then also we offer lots of different great exploratory classes And we get lots of help from community members who are able to come in and teach things like cooking, photography. We have Northwest Coast Design happening right now. We have marimbas. We have rock band that's taught by Rob Cohen. And so we have these great opportunities, I think, for middle schoolers if being in a smaller setting would be a better match for them. So,
as one choose to get into the Junior Coffee School?
Well,
Junior Community Charter School.
Well, what you would need to do is fill out an optional schools application. And right now, that's that application is available on the Juneau School District website. As soon as you go to the website, it's right in the middle, right on the front page, under News. You can fill out the application. You get it into either the district office, or you can bring it by one of the optional schools. Our school, of course, is accepting applications. You fill it out. We make sure it gets into the school district office by April 29th. That is the deadline. And then the following week is the day when we have a random lottery for our school. It's a random lottery, and names are drawn. And if the family's name is drawn, that we will call them starting that week, the first week of May. And so the first couple of weeks in May, we'll be making phone calls to families if they get into the program, and seeing if they are interested and sign them up. So, and we have some dates we'd like to share with you before we go today. Star, you want to start?
Sure. We want to let everyone know that we're having a First Friday event this Friday from 4:30 to 6. Each student in the school has chosen a piece of artwork to put on display and has written an artist statement that tells about them as an artist and their chosen artwork. We're going to have music that is performed by the middle school band.
The middle school and the 4-5 guitar group is playing.
And then artwork on display. So we invite everyone to come in and see that. It's going to be a fun time. We're pretty excited. I do want to also say, along with that, all of the grades at JCCS do have weekly art class, too,
yeah,
not just
true.
Middle school.
Yeah.
Then, let's see, we have a couple other things coming up. Saturday, April 9th, we are having we're joining with the Tlingit Language Program and Montessori Borealis for an optional school jamboree from 2 to 4, and that's going to be at the downtown library. So we're hoping that people will come and find out about the options in Juneau for various programs. And then Tuesday, April 12th, JCCS will have an open house, so anyone who's interested in the school can come. That's going to be from 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock that night. And then the following day, April 13th, we're inviting parents to come and actually visit our classrooms during the day to see what a typical day would be like. And we have a morning session from 9 to 11, and then afternoon from 1 to 3. So if people are wanting to come see what it's like at our school, they're welcome to come during those times.
Is there a website location?
Mm-hmm. Juneau Schools, we can be found on juneauschools.org. And also we have a new website, mm-hmm. and that's JunoCharterSchool.org.
Yeah. But if you go to the school district website and try to find us the standard way to find any of the schools in Juneau, there's a link that will just direct you to our new mm-hmm. website. So,
and if I could just mention a few more dates. On the 13th and the 17th, the 13th at 7 o'clock at night and the 17th at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, our school, JCCS, is hosting a film called Most Likely to Succeed. And it's a film that was the winner of, one of the candidates, I guess, for the Sundance Film Festival. It's just an informational film about a different way of looking at education and how we might be teaching our young people these days for their future ahead of them. And also, our Juneau School District representative will be at all the kindergarten registration opportunities in the neighborhood schools on the 21st if you want more information. And again, the deadline for the application for optional programs is April 29th. So.
All right, thank you so much for coming to the station today.
Thank you for having us.
I neglected to tell you the name of the artist who is heard musically. It's Norman Baker in the back row, and they're going to be performing at the Oscar Folk Festival and also at Louise Douglas Inn on Wednesday, April 6th. This is Hannah Yoder. the Yoder Band. They're going to be performing next week as part of the Alaska Folk Festival in several places downtown. In the studio with you now is Owen Broody and also Suzanne Ainsworth here to talk about the community schools. Thank you for coming by.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for having us. And I am really pleased to be here and tell you a little bit about the community schools program through the Juneau School District. Most people are familiar with it, but we offer a wide range of classes, all the way from fencing to Zumba with a little bit of roller skating 101 mixed in. And we've been doing that, I wish I knew when it started, but it's been at least 20 years, at least. And we have the classes in different schools in the evenings and weekends. And they're a lot of fun. Most people that have taken the class have done it before. So that's a little bit about that. I'm really excited because we have most of our classes ongoing, but there's still three of them that haven't started yet. So wanted to tell you a little bit about those. If you ever wanted to learn about hula, there's a beginning hula class that hasn't started yet, and it's going to be offered at the Marie Drake Building. It's going to start on April 5th. It'll be on five Tuesdays. It's only $35 to shake your booty. Yeah.
And I don't think they call it that.
Yeah, I know. I shouldn't say that. I didn't say that, did I? No. One of the other ones is, and that is Lamomi Martin that teaches the hula class, and she is awesome. She has a large contingent of women. I don't know if there's any men, but they have been meeting on a regular basis. The other one that hasn't started yet is our fly casting class, and Tony Soltes has been an instructor for at least 15 years. April 5th and 7th at Floyd Dryden School. That's just a two-day commitment for 2 hours to learn all about how to do fly casting. So that's what I wanted to fill you in. The other thing is Community Schools is always looking for new instructors. Most of our instructors do this because they have a passion for either fencing or we have American Sign Language ongoing, and they just want to share that talent with the community. So if you have a talent or a skill that you'd like to share, give me a call. Suzanne.
Apologies for loss of our signal there. Odin, you have about 15 seconds to go. You want to tell people a phone number to call?
Yes, for Alaska Host Customer Service Training, Saturday, April 9th, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., Saturday, April 16th, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., April 9th at J.D. High Library, April 16th at Thunder Mountain High School. And the course fee is $25, and it's a five-hour course. And the phone number to call is the community school's office, 523-1761.
All right, thanks everybody for coming in.
Thank you.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay.